I'm your brother Fire Mary Diesel Ogaya, and welcome to the Class War Battlefield Podcast. When I started this show in 2011, my goal was to inform. Obviously, the show has evolved, a lot of new topics, a lot of new thoughts, taking on metaphysics, some spirituality, hitting you with all types of things that you may have never heard of, and some that you have. It's always lively. But now I'm coming to you to ask you to help me prolong this podcast. For years, I have been producing this podcast for free on your behalf. I am now coming to you to ask you to support this work. $2, $5, $10, $20, $50, whatever you can do, please do.
And now, the definition.
It's Bo again. So today we are going to talk about the U.S. House of Representatives and pledges and where it goes from here. So if you have missed the news, the Republican Party is having some issues choosing a speaker. Basically, they've kind of scrapped everybody that has tried thus far. Starting fresh. This weekend, people who wish to be speaker, why anybody would want this job, I do not know, they're calling and trying to gather allies. And on Monday, they're going to get together and try to once again designate somebody to be the speaker. And then hopefully at some point next week, there will be a floor vote on it. And we may or may not find out something then. A new wrinkle has emerged. A number of Republicans in the House are suggesting that there needs to be a loyalty pledge. That basically, everybody signs this, and they're agreeing to back the whoever the speaker is, whoever the designee is that gets chosen, they agree to back that person. There's some opposition to it, unsurprisingly, from the Freedom Caucus, which is the far-right caucus. Here's the thing about this. While I understand the general idea, the real issue kind of emerges when you realize that those people who are, let's just say, not that concerned about having a functioning government, they don't care about the pledge. So I wouldn't even necessarily count on them to follow through with it, even if they do sign it. The Republican Party needs help. Right now, it looks like the best shot is Emmer, if they're going to have a partisan Speaker of the House. If it doesn't work this time, it's past time for them to try to reach across the aisle. This is getting out of hand. And I'm starting to believe that there may be some members of the House of Representatives who are using this to run out the clock or try to run out the clock to cause a government shutdown. And this way, they can say, oh, it's not that we chose to shut it down. We are just too bad at politics to choose a speaker. The strategy of delay, delay, delay seems to have moved from Trump through the ranks of the Republican Party. And it certainly seems at this point that you have a whole lot of people in the Republican Party who are more concerned about Twitter clicks than governing. And it does seem at this point that their intention is to cause a government shutdown, cause harm, economically to the average American. So they think Republicans will fix it. I'm not joking. That certainly appears to be what the strategy is from a number of them. The Republican Party is kind of fighting amongst itself to determine whether or not they're going to be a political party in the traditional sense, or whether or not they're going to be a sideshow, a unserious political party really meant for launching a career in some other field. That's how it's starting to look, and that's how it's starting to devolve. Anyway, it's just a thought. Y'all have a good day.
Imagine being such a schmuck that all the other people in the schmuck party not only hate you and are trying to defeat you, but that they have coordinated their hatred so that the votes against you keep growing and you get more humiliated each time you step out there. Imagine that's you. That would mean you are Jim Jordan. Hi, schmuck. We've had two rounds of floor votes, writes Congressman Rutherford of Florida, and the vote against Jordan has only gotten stronger. The hardball tactics haven't worked. If we move to a third round, we already know the opposition is on track to grow. It's time for Representative Jordan to understand this race is over. Tonight, I suggest we either go to conference to show him in private or back to the floor to show him in public. Representative Jordan is fiddling while the world is on fire. Hot damn, the Republicans hate Jim Jordan more than we do. I'll get to what Rutherford referred to there as hardball tactics. He ain't talking about the show Chris Matthews now does for passersby and invisible friends. But first, there is more reporting that the vote total against Jordan didn't just increase from 20 on the first ballot to 22 on the second, but it was increased deliberately. Quote, some of Jim Jordan's opponents tell me they have been purposely staggering their no votes over multiple ballots, wrote a CNN reporter, a strategy designed to show Jordan's speakership opposition is only growing. And that's why they tell me Jordan will bleed even more support on a third ballot. Reporting by other outlets late last night, including that of The Washington Post, implies the same thing. Why? Why, as the Republican brand, we may not be smart or honest or patriotic, but at least we're organized crime. Why, as the Republican brand is melting around them, why are key members of the caucus seemingly making it worse by not just trying to beat Jordan, but by trying to beat him up? Because he started it. Congressman Rutherford there says Jordan has been bullying people for votes and is personally to blame for threats and doxing against those who have not supported him. He's absolutely responsible for it, Rutherford says, and it doesn't work. Nobody likes to have their arm twisted. Congresswoman Miller Meeks says she has gotten, quote, credible death threats after abandoning her support for Jordan. Congressman Womack says, based on what I've been through and what my staff has been through, it's obvious what the strategy is, attack, attack, attack. Congressman Jimenez of Florida says he went to Jordan directly and told him, I don't really take well to threats. Congresswoman Jen Kegins says, threats and intimidation tactics will not change my principles and values. But on the other hand, Congresswoman Kay Granger of Texas says she's been the victim of intimidation and threats rather than threats and intimidation. Lastly, Congressman Don Bacon's wife got threatening anonymous texts on her personal cell. Why is your husband causing chaos by not supporting Jim Jordan? I thought he was a team player, and your husband will not hold any political office ever again. What a disappoint and failure he is. That semi-literate misuse of disappoint instead of disappointment suggests, of course, that the text could easily have been personally sent by the boneheaded Jim Jordan himself. So what next? There is the likeliest answer. Jordan, who, like most of the Republicans, has never thought for a moment that if you base a political career on or party on threats and hate, that eventually somebody on your own side will threaten and hate you more than you can threaten and hate them. Jim Jordan will stage a third vote anyway, and he will lose this one by at least 24. There is the very low chance that there's a surprise twist here, like there's a big reveal sometime today, that Matt Gaetz actually works for Hakeem Jeffries or something. And since Gaetz propelled this snowball down the hill right into Republican world headquarters, the Occam's razor explanation of this would be that he did it deliberately. Thank you, Nancy Faust. Twist indeed. Or if you want the Fantasyland version of how this turns out. For a long time now, whenever I have seen this phony Jim Jordan walking around in his shirt sleeves, because that's his blue collar pitch, that he's got his jacket off, and that means he's working hard for you, Mr. and Mrs. Joe Ohio. As opposed to just implying that he's taken his jacket off and can't remember where he put it. Every time I have seen Jordan do this shtick, I have thought of one character in the most jam-packed piece of political fiction of the 1960s, the Otto Preminger film Advise and Consent. In it, there is a character called Senator Fred Van Ackerman, supposedly of Wyoming, a smarmy little bug-eyed fascist played to the hilt by the great George Grizzard. Van Ackerman is a climber. And when it appears that one of his Senate colleagues is blocking the dying president's controversial pick for Secretary of State, Van Ackerman blackmails that senator over his gay dalliances during the war. I mean, this was some startling content for 1962. Anyway, the senior senators eventually find out about Van Ackerman's perfidy, and they confront him, and they confront him during a vote on the floor, and they bury him alive. Fortunately, says the majority leader, our country always manages to survive patriots like you. We could introduce a resolution to censure and expel you, but we don't want Brig Anderson's tired old sin made public, whatever it was. So we'll let you stay if you want to. And as the blood drains from Van Ackerman's face, the majority leader's deputy then croaks, if you want to. And you realize Van Ackerman has the choice between resigning or spending the rest of his life as Senator Susan Collins. Jim Jordan is about one plot twist away from being Fred Van Ackerman in Advise and Consent. He's not only not going to be Speaker of the House, he's going to be damn lucky at this rate if he winds up just serving out his term.
Fortunately, our country always manages to survive patriots like you.
Yes.
We could introduce a resolution to censor and expel you.
Bentley.
But we don't want Brig Anderson's tired old sin made public.
Mrs. Bishop.
Whatever it was.
Yes.
So we let you stay.
Mr. Broadhead.
If you want to.
If you want to.
It's been nearly 3 weeks since Kevin McCarthy was ousted as Speaker of the House, and Republicans appear no closer to selecting his replacement. The House GOP conference voted to drop Jim Jordan on Friday. They're going to start over at square one tomorrow. Joining me now to game out the odds is former Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich. All right, good to see you, sir. What is your advice as Republicans are increasingly taking heat on all sides about looking like they can't govern, even themselves?
Well, right now they can't govern, and I think that the eight people who betrayed the conference and joined the Democrats to defeat 96% of the conference unleashed furies that I don't think they'd even dreamed of, because they gave every person the right to be equally destructive and equally angry, and now it's a mess. I got just a couple of observations. First, they should have stayed in. When they get back here, they should stay in. They should go into a conference, not come out, bring food in, and stay there. A very simple test. Can you get 217 votes? They shouldn't bring anybody out until they have 217. And second, That 217 has to be committed not just to elect a speaker, but to stick together for the next 5 or 6 months. They got big decisions coming down the road. There's a very real danger that they'll elect somebody and 3 or 4 or 5 weeks from now, you're going to have a group of people blow up and decide to go back into the same mess. So they need to pick somebody to get stability. I frankly wish that they, and Calista and I have talked about this, I wish they had a woman candidate out of all the candidates they've got running. You know, so, somebody like Elise Stefanik or Beth Van Dyne, who had been a mayor of a city before becoming a congressman. I think in some ways, given the level of rowdiness and the level of juvenile behavior, it's conceivable that a female speaker would be more effective in actually getting them all to get together and stick together. Mm. That's the key. They have to learn to stick together.
Well, it may get to that point. We've got 7 now. None of the ones that you mentioned are the potential female contenders there. But do you think any of the ones who are in, or if there's another name you can think of on the Hill, can actually get to 217? Because it seems to be if the person's too conservative, you're going to lose the moderates. If they are too, you know, somebody that's looking like Kevin McCarthy did, like that he's going to work with Democrats on things and he's too far to the middle, you've got the extreme who say, I'm a no vote right. forever and ever.
Look, I would do a very simple test. Get them all in the same room, as I said earlier. Bring food in. Have an occasional bathroom break. If it lasts long enough, as Byron Daniel said, you know, have an hour off to go shower. But otherwise, stay together and keep meeting and keep talking. And I'd work backwards. I would do a whip check and say, who could possibly get 217? I don't care who they are. They don't have to be candidates right now. That could be the most surprising person. If they can get 217 and they can keep 217, make them speaker. They've tried the other technique, which is to find a personality, have them get a majority of the conference, walk onto the floor of the House and get beat. Well, the only number that matters here is 217. If you can't get it and keep it, remember, it's not just one day. If you can't keep it through the end of this year and make very tough decisions, and have the conference say, you know, I don't necessarily like all of them, but it's what we have to do to govern. You know, I wrote a book called March to the Majority where we described how we created a majority after 40 years, how we got it reelected for the first time since 1928, how we balanced the budget for 4 straight years, the only time in your lifetime. There are a lot of lessons these guys have to learn. And right now they're so angry and they're so dysfunctional, they can't just play rope-a-dope. They've got to start from victory. Who can get 217? That's the person who ought to be speaker. And trying to start from, let me pick my favorite and see if they can then get 217. You could be here for weeks. The record in 1856 was 2 months and 103 ballots. I would urge the House Republicans not to try to break that record.
Well, if they're trapped in there with their food and limited potty breaks, then maybe they will have time to read your book and consider that as well. Former Speaker Newt Gingrich, thank you for dropping in.
Just know this is not a time to play games. This is embarrassing for the Republican Party. It's embarrassing for the nation.
That was the former spineless MAGA Republican Speaker of the House, Kevin McCarthy, describing the Republicans' behavior as embarrassing. You think? I'm Ben Mycelis from the Midas Touch Network. MAGA Republican after MAGA Republican went on the weekend shows and started saying how embarrassing the Republican Party has become now that it is the MAGA Republican Party. They didn't use those specific words, but they certainly explained how embarrassing their behavior is, although in typical embarrassing MAGA Republican fashion, they tried to blame the Democrats when in fact the MAGA Republicans, y'all control the majority in the House of Representatives. You can pick your own speaker. It's very, very easy if you had some modicum of discipline and had some modicum of principles, but you don't. Here is MAGA Republican being told by Jake Tapper, don't you guys realize how clownish you look? Play this clip.
In caucus, that we're able to resolve that so that we go unified to the House floor and deliver a speaker.
I hope you don't take this personally, but do you guys have any idea how clownish you look?
Well, you know, Jake, I'm very fond of saying that Congress is a lot like high school, but even more so. So hopefully we'll get past this. And, you know, I certainly have been part of the governing majority, and I'm going to stay part of that and look forward to those who are on the fringes hopefully coming together so that we can get a speaker.
I said that to Congressman Womack last week, high school, and he said that that's an insult to high school students. It's more like junior high. Congressman Turner, Chairman Turner, good to see you. I hope you guys pick a speaker sometime soon.
And here is Republican Congressmember McCall on the weekend shows also saying how embarrassing and humiliating the Republican Party has become. But then notice at the end of what he's saying, though, he tries to, like all these MAGA Republicans do, tries to blame the Democrats. Well, actually, working with the Democrats would be very, very, very dangerous. You know, sure, not picking a speaker poses an existential threat to our national security, but if we were to form a coalition government and work in a bipartisan fashion with individuals who are trying to lower prescription drug prices and protect Social Security and protect Medicare and protect our veterans and to bring more jobs here and to increase wages for us, that would be very, very dangerous, wouldn't it be? Here's Republican Congressmember McCall, who, by the way, chairs the Armed Services Committee. Play this clip.
You need a Speaker of the House before you get any of this done. What
a little
what
detail.
The hell's going on?
I have to say, and it's my 10th term in Congress.
Yeah.
This is probably one of the most embarrassing things I've seen, because if we don't have a Speaker of the House, we can't govern. And every day it goes by, we're essentially shut down as a government. We have very important issues right now, war and peace, and we cannot deal with an aid package or my resolution condemning Hamas and supporting Israel. We can't.
You can't even pass a resolution condemning Hamas.
Because
are you supporting? I've lost count now. I think we're pushing a dozen candidates and potential candidates for speaker. who are you supporting?
I haven't decided, but I want a speaker in the chair so we can move forward and govern my issues, my Committee of War and Peace. It's too dangerous right now. The world's on fire, and this is so dangerous what we're doing. And most importantly, it's embarrassing because it empowers and emboldens our adversaries like Chairman Xi, who says, you know, democracy doesn't work.
Is there any possibility of, I don't want to say coalition government, but is there any possibility that you're just going to need some kind of an arrangement that has Democratic support as well?
Discussed. I mean, if you can't get to 217 within our conference,
which is a really not a strange hypothetical,
on
it seems
the floor,
that way. Yeah.
You know, how do you get there? But I think for some, they see that as very dangerous as well.
But you wouldn't rule it out if
Look, I'd rather it be the Republicans nominating and voting on the floor for a Republican speaker. But this can't go on forever. I don't know if we're going to have a speaker next week. I don't know how this plays out.
Back to the former spineless Speaker of the House, Kevin McCarthy. There's a little bit of a longer clip here where Kevin McCarthy says how embarrassing it is. But again, he then blames the Democrats. You know, he goes, there's the crazy eight with Matt Gaetz, and then they join forces with the Democrats. That's why this is going on right now. Here, play this clip.
Look, as we have said, the House of Representatives has been without a speaker for nearly 3 weeks now. What do you say to Americans who look at this chaos and believe it's a sign that Republicans cannot govern?
Well, it's embarrassing, and you've got to understand why we're here. Eight Republicans led by Gaetz have created this chaos by joining every single Democrat in voting to shut down one branch of government. Look, I would do the exact same thing again. Could you imagine if we were having this discussion right now with the American government shut down, with our troops in the Middle East wondering when they'll ever get paid again? Keeping the government open was the right decision to make, and I'd make it again each and every day. Now, the two men, Steve Scalise and Jim Jordan, they could have done the job as speaker. Unfortunately, the chaos has continued.
Let me reiterate. You are in charge. Republicans control the majority in the House of Representatives, not the Democrats. The Republicans do. You, Kevin McCarthy, in your spineless speakership, agreed to allow Republican Matt Gaetz the opportunity to bring a motion to vacate with just one vote, to vacate the speakership. And then you're the one who decided to attack Democrats all the time, launch a completely frivolous impeachment inquiry, a totally unconstitutional and baseless one against President Biden, and to empower Marjorie Taylor Greene and turn the House of Representatives into a clown show. That's on you. But here is Kevin McCarthy now giving his endorsement for the next speaker to Tom Emmer. Here, play this clip.
Do you think Tom Emmer will actually be able to get enough votes to be speaker? Because all of my reporting suggests it's an uphill battle.
I do.
Speaking of the clown show, Donald Trump tells his allies that he doesn't support Tom Emmer's speaker bid. So Donald Trump is now saying to his MAGA Republicans, do not support Tom Emmer. And there are now nine individuals in the speaker's race: Emmer, Mike Johnson, Kevin Hearn, Byron Donalds, Austin Scott, Jack Bergman, Pete Sessions, Gary Palmer, and Dan Mauser. Let's go see what a rational Republican is. By the way, someone who I probably disagree with on a lot of issues, but someone who supports our democracy. This is Liz Cheney. And here in this interview from this weekend, she talks about the domestic threats that we are confronting right now as a result of the MAGA Republicans. Play this clip.
What do you think is driving the domestic threats against lawmakers within the Republican Party and also among some Democrats?
The domestic threats are absolutely being driven by Donald Trump and unfortunately, some of his supporters who, in fact, have encouraged and taken steps that have resulted in, as we saw on January 6th, political violence. When you have a member of Congress, reportedly, like Warren Davidson from Ohio, who in the meeting with Jim Jordan last week, when some of the holdouts raised with Jordan the fact that they were getting death threats, one of them told me that in response, Congressman Davidson said, well, that's not Jim Jordan's fault. That's your fault for voting against him. That is the kind of encouragement and acceptance of violence that is absolutely has no place in this party, should have no place in our country.
And here Liz Cheney talks about the global threats caused by MAGA Republicans like Jim Jordan. Play the clip.
And as a nation, we all ought to be very grateful for that. And we ought to reject the kind of attacks that we're seeing, obviously, launched by Donald Trump, but also the kind of lies coming out of Jim Jordan and some other House Republicans, the notion that the entire judiciary system or the FBI is weaponized against us. And I would urge that people think about, as we look at the threats globally, the notion that we've got Republicans saying we're going to defund the FBI, we're going to defund the Department of Justice. Jim Jordan wants to stop a number of the programs that have kept us safe since 9/11. That is very dangerous, and people like that don't understand the threat we face.
And as you know, it's not just House Republicans, it's not just Donald Trump, it's Fox. It's an entire right-wing ecosystem that is amplifying these lies.
And by the way, this is MAGA Republican Senator Tim Scott, who's seeking the Republican nomination for the presidency. And just Tim Scott just goes to show you the perfect MAGA Republican ethos. He claims he supports funding for Ukraine and Israel, but just because Biden's packaging it, he doesn't support the way that's done. And that just shows you how broken the Republican Party is. It's not a both sides issue. It just, so Joe Biden wants the same thing that you want, but because Joe Biden wants it, well, then you can't support it. I mean, that's what they're like on everything. Here's Republican Tim Scott.
But you support aid to Ukraine. You support aid to Israel. If these come together, if that's the way this bill comes up, you're not going to vote against it, are you?
I will in the current construct. There's no doubt that we spent about, over the last 2 years, $100 billion to Ukraine in this one package. It's $61 billion for Ukraine, only $14 billion for Israel. Israel is at the beginning of a long, protracted war. I think we are much better off, better served as a nation, focusing our resources and our attention immediately on Israel and continuing to provide the kind of level of accountability and responsibility the American people want to see as it relates to the resources for Ukraine.
Well, there you have it, folks. Total, utter chaos amongst the MAGA Republicans, them calling themselves embarrassing, shameful, humiliating. You're hearing them saying it about themselves.
I am a real American, fight for the rights of every man. I am a real American, fight for what's right, fight for your life.
This year, there are going to be some tough primaries.
And I think that's good. Competition in these primaries is good. Competition makes us work harder and be more efficient and produce more. And I hope you'll get out there and work hard for the candidates who reflect your values, your priorities, because despite what the pundits want you to think, contested primaries aren't civil war. They're democracy at work, and that's beautiful. I was the product of a competitive primary where, running for governor, I faced five guys in the party, and we put our ideas and our experience out there on the table for debate. And then we allowed, of course, the voters to decide. And that is a healthy process, and it gives Americans the kind of leadership that they want and deserve. And so in 2010, I tip my hat to anyone with the courage to throw theirs in the ring, and may the best ideas and candidates win. From the bottom of my heart, I thank you for being part of the solution. God bless you, Tea Partiers, and God bless the USA. Thank you.
Our show this week is brought to you once again by Hello Fascist, the at-home meal kit for Republicans. If you have legitimate reasons for thinking the restaurant kitchen is peeing in your food, try Hello Fascist at-home meal kit. It's like they built a wall around your balsamic pork loin. And they do deliver to the governor's mansion of Arkansas, so, you know.
Don't you worry.
Huckabee Sanders, if she wins the governor's race in Arkansas, she can still get her at-home meal kit.
There's a decent chance that she will.
Because she's a legacy.
Yeah. Although the Hello Fascist people are going to have to go into sort of high end catering, I think, because in case you haven't noticed, the people who are the more grassrootsy folks, the folks that are in your neighborhood and own local businesses, aren't really backing away from the whole fascism thing.
They're not into it.
They're kind of like, yeah, that's who we are. We've always been this way. And that is what is truly surreal about living where we live, Springfield, Illinois. Because, I mean, I participate in the local life of the community, in municipal stuff, in meetings about businesses and blah, blah, blah. And I'm not the mayor because I don't have the hair for it. But but I do participate to the best of my ability. And there is this disorienting sense where you're in a meeting for an hour or an hour and a half talking about business closings and openings and curb cuts. So bars can open little mini parks in front of their places, and chamber of commerce marketing and parking and campaigns to bring people downtown, because that's really important. And that's the whole agenda. Mm-hmm. And I understand that. And it's perfectly valid and true and critical, especially for a town that, you know, to survive, you're going to have to do these things. Mm-hmm. And then you leave that meeting and go to a completely different universe where the news is completely dominated by the shockwaves from the January 6th insurrection. Mm-hmm. Everything is a backdrop to that. Everything. There's no conversation about curb cuts or business openings. There's a high-level statistics about, you know, the economy and whatnot. But the urgency of the conversation is entirely centered around, holy shit, the Republican Party really is a terrorist organization. Mm-hmm. And they really aren't backing away from this. And they're giving the worst people a pat on the back, and the one or two decent people, and I certainly wouldn't classify Liz Cheney as decent, but they're bashing people who think that insurrection might in fact be an impeachable offense. And it's what the Democrats are going to do, what Republicans are going to do, and this is going to be a removal or whatnot. And yet all of this is floating on top of the real problem, which is the Republican Party, the modern GOP, has always been a white grievance party. Mm-hmm. Always. Mm-hmm. And it is a thing that we as a country refuse to come to terms with because of the moral and political and law enforcement implications. Mm-hmm. And we've said this many, many times, and it bears repeating this week especially, that there is a real deep problem in this country with white nationalism and the sense that white people should be calling the shots no matter how badly they fuck up. And anytime anyone does anything that they don't approve of, that should be canceled out because our grievances take priority. Our bullshit grievances that are fed to us by hate radio take precedent over everything else. And there's 70 plus million of these people out there. And they vote in every election. And they're heavily armed. And they're not coming back.
We're back to square one in the House after three votes where Jim Jordan not only failed to get the votes necessary to become Speaker, but actually went backwards on all three ballots. And so now we've got a new flood of apparently self-hating Republicans coming forward to hold the job that is so horrible, Mike Rowe wouldn't even touch it. But here's a fun new twist, and this is according to Politico. We've got a unity pledge. That's right, unity pledges are back. So according to Politico, Republicans are now passing around a promise to, quote, support the speaker-designate duly elected by the House Republican Conference, regardless of who that candidate is, when their election proceeds to the House floor. Further, I plan to vote for the speaker-designate on the House floor for as long as they remain speaker-designate. Here's the thing. These pledges are so funny because they're so clearly the last grasps of some dwindling faction of quasi-moderate Republicans who think that the extremists, who they've emboldened these last few years by capitulating at every turn, would ever actually abide by a unity pledge. This unity pledge is some toothless effort that's really just meant to make those moderates feel better. But let's be honest, deep down they know that if the House Freedom Caucus doesn't get what it wants, that there's no chance they'll just lay down their arms. Like I almost feel bad for these moderates who think that the same far-right extremist lunatics in their conference, who emboldened and supported an insurrection against our own government, think that some little piece of paper is going to be what it takes to get them to give up their crusade for power. Here's why I think this is doomed. Matt Gaetz and the other House Freedom Caucus members who ousted McCarthy know that everything is on the line right now. They can't have made their party endure this humiliation for more than 3 weeks now and still get nothing out of it. Like, they're pot committed at this point. So they have to get one of their fellow extremists in there, otherwise this whole thing was for nothing. And guess what? Because the margins are so slim, they have that power. If all eight of them, or even just a few of them, withhold their votes, no one is getting elected. So the moderates can pass around all the unity pledges they want, but at the end of the day, you know, and I know, and even all of those Republicans know that a strongly worded letter is little more than kindling, fire starter, for those extremists in the House Republican Conference. And so while I don't know how this ends, this might be a good moment for some introspection from those moderate Republicans in the House who kept allowing the extremists to chip away at their power, and who allowed them spots on the Rules Committee to have a majority, and who allowed them the one-member motion to vacate, and who refused to speak out while these people devoured their party, because now it's finally too late. The extremists have now fully consumed the GOP, and given how much power they have, they're never going to relinquish it. Like, I'm sorry, but you're not going to suddenly get Matt Gaetz to support some Kevin McCarthy clone because, A, the whole point of the House Freedom Conference is that they don't compromise and they don't capitulate because they are hostage takers at heart, and B, the dysfunction doesn't even hurt them. Remember, these people, at a fundamental level, do not believe in government. They want it to fail because then they can point to that failure as evidence that government doesn't work and that we should eliminate the DOJ and the FBI and the IRS and the EPA and the Department of Education. Like, in other words, these people will gladly break it and then point to the thing that they just broke as evidence that it can't work. And of course, what they conveniently leave out is that the only reason it can't work is because they won't let it. And obviously, the flip side of that is that when you have people in charge who do believe in government, it actually can work to help people. When the Democrats had basically the exact same majority that the Republicans currently have, they passed the American Rescue Plan and the Inflation Reduction Act, the PACT Act, the CHIPS Act, the Infrastructure Law, the Gun Safety Law, reauthorized the Violence Against Women Act, codified marriage equality into federal law. Again, all with the same size majority that Republicans can't currently manage to elect a speaker with. So no, it's not that government is inherently dysfunctional or that it can't work. It's that government only works when you elect people who want it to. The Republicans are not those people, and they're making that abundantly clear right now. So they can pass around unity pledges, but it's clear that their conference is being held together by gum and paperclips at this point. And hopefully the country sees this and recognizes that when you hire unqualified people, this is what it looks like. Here's a preview of my interview with Jamie Raskin. More and more Republicans are now recognizing how bad this looks for them in the House and trying to pin the blame on Democrats for their inability to elect a speaker of their own party, saying that all the Democrats joined with just a tiny little fraction of Republicans, and so because of that, Democrats should actually shoulder the blame here. Can I have your response to that?
Well, first of all, Matt Gaetz and his group of, I don't know, eight or nine who managed to overthrow Kevin McCarthy did it under a rule that Kevin McCarthy promoted that we all opposed. He was the one who advanced the rule that one member at any point could move to vacate the chair. So he's hoist on his own petard. I mean, he's a victim of his own terrible rulemaking. And, you know, if you live by extreme MAGA rules, you die by extreme MAGA rules. And that's why he was overthrown. I mean, we have been consistent. We have voted, I think, Now it's 18 times, maybe 19 times for Hakeem Jeffries for speaker. We're Democrats. That's who we want. We're not voting for Kevin McCarthy or Jim Jordan or any of them. I mean, it may be that there is a pro-constitutionalist Republican we could support if we decided to do that in our caucus. I mean, if it came down to it, we would probably support Liz Cheney, because she, even though we disagree with her politics so much, we find her to be a champion of, you know, constitutional patriotism.
Yeah, well, I think the fact that she's a champion for constitutional patriotism is the exact reason why she wouldn't be a suitable choice for Republicans. But, you know, Jim Jordan has lost multiple rounds for speaker and yet continued to plow ahead as if somehow that was a mandate for him to serve. So can you speak on the irony of Republicans writ large embracing election denialism only to now get stuck with the humiliation of having to deal with an election denier in their own conference?
And he's in denial about the repeated election results from the House floor, too. I mean, he is following the cult master himself, Donald Trump, in simply refusing to take no for an answer. And it's as if his ambitions for power and control trump everything else that's going on. It's more important to them than aid to our besieged Democratic allies and Ukraine and Israel. It's more important than getting humanitarian assistance to the civilians in Gaza. It's more important than keeping the government of the United States going. You know, we're telling them, come over and meet us in the middle for a bipartisan path forward. There are a lot of things we can work out, but it's not going to be by putting an insurrectionist in the speaker's chair, someone whose overriding legislative agenda today is to ban abortion across the country.
What does it say that when the Republican conference was forced to vote in public, Jim Jordan finished at the end of this whole charade with 194 votes, but when the subsequent private vote took place out of view of the bloodthirsty, rabid base, Jordan only garnered 86 votes, less than half. What did you take from that?
Well, I think it confirmed the applause meter that we were registering on the House floor. Like when Hakeem Jeffries was nominated, there was enthusiastic, lusty applause from the Democrats, really cheering and feeling very good about his leadership. And even after Jordan was nominated the first time, it was just completely lukewarm tepid applause. So you got to believe that there were some people who were voting yes in public because they didn't want to face the wrath and the retaliation and the reprisals of Fox News and the death threats and so on, but were opposing him in private.
Now, Jim, show this gentleman how you can dance and sing.
That's my attitude towards the Western powers. If you want to say there's no rules, fine. Don't go crying for your mummy when that comes.
America today finds herself in a unique situation. She's the only country in history in a position to become involved in a bloodless revolution.
If America does not respond creatively to the challenge to banish racism, some future historian will have to say that a great civilization died because it lacked the soul and commitment to make justice a reality for all men.
When the system doesn't work for the majority of the people, you gotta change the system.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, I'm your brother, Brian Mary D. Soka. Yeah. You're welcome to this Class War Battlefield podcast, episode addendum. I don't plan to make this very long, but, we'll see what happens. Usually when I say that, it ends up being 50-something minutes. Watching the chaos that has overtaken the Republican Party and overtaken the House of Representatives as an extension of the Republican Party. Along with taking in comments that I've made and that other people have made, particularly comments I made in the series that dealt with this chaos, the early portion of this chaos mostly, and then comments from people who have been following this nightmare as it has unfolded over the last 30 years. It is something, by the way. So far as I can tell, I don't believe anybody's made the connection that heading into 2024, we are literally coming into a 30-year alignment with the Republican takeover of the House of Representatives for the first time in 40 years, way back in 1994. No one has commented on the fact that this seems to be a culmination of that 30-year process, which took the Republican Party from nearly irrelevant to catastrophically wed to a billionaire plan to not only unravel the economic social safety net that had been put into place by the Great Society and the New Deal, but to create dysfunction within Washington, which they then can cite themselves as a reason in which they needed to defund the government, which is what they've been aiming to do, all except for the military and intelligence apparatus. I chuckle when I really get thinking about how Republicans are so opposed to defunding the police, while they have literally made their platform over the last 30 years about defunding the government. I chuckle until I realize why that is. For Republicans, police departments are an extension of the military. They are a domestic military force on the soil. And so, why would you want to defund that? Increase tons of money to the military while cutting social safety net, allow the military to then run wild and rampant throughout the streets to control the problems that are created from unraveling an economic social safety net. Which, you know, ask any country where there is no economic social safety net, and they'll tell you it's a bad idea, you don't want to do it. But I digress. As I've been watching this chaos, and I've been hearing the solutions presented. Now, I must say here, just so you can have an idea in the future of what solutions I'm talking about, I'm recording this late October 21st, 2023. The solutions I'm referencing here are, one, a bipartisan option, which would see maybe Hakeem Jeffries or some moderate Republican, possibly from, for the first time in the history of this country, from outside the House of Representatives come in to act as Speaker. Or two, giving pro temp McHenry full power of Speaker, maybe even electing him Speaker, and allowing him
to do the job full time, or, and this one seems less and less likely, but maybe, allowing McCarthy back in to be the Speaker of the House, which would just be, wow. But as I'm listening to the commentaries about these solutions, one thing has become rather clear. The first of the three is only viable if the person is not a Democrat, or more likely isn't a real Democrat, but a Republican who runs as a Democrat because they're in a Democratic district. In other words, Hakeem Jeffries is not going to be Speaker of the House during this session, which I find very odd. I find it very odd that the Republican Party is not willing to entertain the idea of making Hakeem Jeffries Speaker of the House. Why? This is a party who constantly wraps itself in the American flag. They say of themselves that they are the most patriotic, constitutionally dedicated servicemen and women in this country outside of the military personnel that they support. Their dedication to country over everything raises them in the morning and pushes them, drives them to advocate the policies that they advocate. They are the truest of true patriots. Their blood runs red, white, and blue. They do everything for the benefit of this country. Everything. Now, some of you may be laughing a little bit right now, saying to yourself, I didn't know you were that naive, Ogaya. I didn't know you were that naive. Well, I am just a bit. Or at least, I can play like I am. These folks, many of them, made a huge show of it in opposition of Colin Kaepernick when he dared kneel on a football field to protest the injustices that were afflicting black communities. They opposed him on the grounds that he wasn't being sufficiently patriotic. They opposed him on the grounds that he was slapping the servicemen and women in the face who went over and protected this country, and protected, by the way, his right, Colin Kaepernick's right, to free expression and free speech. They did all of this while claiming that they were greater patriots than Colin Kaepernick because they would never do that. They would never dishonor the flag by kneeling in protest during the national anthem. And yet, at this moment in time, when bipartisanship, could undo this chaos, can stop it in its tracks, can bring order to the House of Representatives, could help
define what order looks like for the next year. Suddenly, ideology trumps patriotism. Ideology trumps Americanism. Ideology trumps the flag. Now, to get out of this, the argument that they would present would be something along the lines of, my conservative values doesn't allow me to work with somebody who I believe wholeheartedly is going to work to pass policies that is going to injure the country. In my response to this statement would be this. You may believe that these policies are going to cause injury to the country, but as Russell Kirk's 10 points of conservatism mentions, this ain't just about belief. You got to present some evidence. You have to present some evidence. And when you present that evidence, make sure it is historically grounded. Another point in his 10. See, I know what conservatives use patriotism for. To hype their egos. To make themselves feel better. To give themselves a superiority complex. In reality, most of y'all don't mean, really, really mean, that you are dedicated to the preservation of operational government when you speak of patriotism. Patriotism is applicable to those areas where you only want to apply it to. Meaning, if you want to believe that being patriotic involves undermining the federal government by shutting it down, shaving off portions of it, destroying other portions of it, decapitating regulatory agencies, then that means you're being patriotic. Because you want it to be that. Anybody who opposes that, therefore, is not patriotic. That includes Democrats. But the problem with such a way of seeing patriotism is that when you get to a point where the things you are doing must necessarily crush or crash into reality, the reality that they themselves are creating, you have to make a decision whether or not to acknowledge your incorrect thinking or to continue to go down the pathway of thinking that way simply to save face. We have arrived at a period in time where everything the Republican Party has been advocating for the past 40 plus years has occurred significantly. First, most in the body politic. Second, most in the governing bodies. They have captured the Supreme Court. They have
who wildly stacked the judiciary at all levels, just about. They have wildly gerrymandered many states to ensure that there is unnatural Republican dominance in those states. And they have managed to make a minority out of a significant portion of the American population simply by using gerrymandered rules and gerrymandering rules and legal precedents that the captured judiciaries set down for them. And then fourth, in the social body, which is evident in their capturing of the media, they have gotten everything that they wanted. And at this crucial period in time, when the country needs to make significant headway in building infrastructure, tackling climate change, and preparing for a shrinking generational presence in the next few years, everything that they have sought to do and done has made it impossible, nearly impossible in some instances, but definitely impossible in other instances, to tackle these tasks. The giving or lending to the Republican Party a significant crisis. Do they continue to seek to do the things they want to do, they've been wanting to do for decades, or do they let those things go? Where we stand presently, suggests that they don't want to let them go yet. And I am terrified by what that could mean in the not too distant future. Because let me be very clear to you, Republican Party. The only way that you get out of this by not losing the House of Representatives significantly in next year's election is by playing the patriotism card. And what I mean by that is the only saving grace that many of you have for next year is to be able to say, when the chips were down and we couldn't pick a leader, we couldn't pick a speaker, what I finally decided to do, because I love the Constitution, I love this country more than I love party, is I decided to vote for a Democrat or a member of the Democratic Party or somebody who the Democrats put up as a bipartisan speaker. And we made it work. We did power sharing agreements. That's the only way you get out of it. No other way. Now the question is for me is, do I want you to get out of it? Do I want you to get out of it? That's irrelevant. See, I am not a patriot per se. But the chaos that you are causing is causing chaos in friends of mine's lives. And I have a problem with that because I don't want to see those people injured. I know this doesn't matter to many of you because you don't know these people that I know. But it is what it is. I don't like seeing them hurt. Beyond this, What we are also witnessing is a stark fact, and I mentioned this in one of my earlier episodes, but I really want to hammer this home here. And this really needs to be paid attention to. These people do not know how to govern. They are not interested in administering things. They are not interested in governing. They're not interested in strategizing plans for the future. Do you not see yet that the billionaires who have been paying these people for decades had goals that they wanted to accomplish, and none of those goals included actually governing? All of the goals that they had, all of the goals that they pushed in legislation, were short-sighted. They were meant to tear apart the governmental structures, what's called the administrative state. They were meant to deflate and deteriorate and rip apart institutions, including institutional norms like we're seeing now. They were meant to ultimately take what was ordinary and distort it to the point where it became unrecognizable, which is what we are seeing presently. So many people look at Donald Trump and say, how? How did we get this? I don't. I've never looked at him and said, how? I look at Donald Trump and I said, Yeah, how could we not get him? Just as with these Republicans presently, how could we not see this coming? How could we not see this coming? These wealthy people have not been sending Republican lawmakers to the Congress who are interested in actually governing or administrating. Governing and administrating are two different things. And I want to give a quick shout out to Driftglass and Blue Gal. I know I often mention them on my show, Professional Left Podcast, but it's really a great show. Y'all should be listening to it. But I want to give them a shout out because they actually did something that I was interested in knowing a year and a half ago, and I actually found a book that I meant to purchase, never did though, about the topic so I could learn about it, which was they explained what the speaker did, what the Speaker of the House did, and it is an administrative position. And, you know, I'm not going to go into it. I think this is something that you could research and you should research. But understanding, administering and governing is different. And the fact that the Republican Party presently doesn't seem interested in either one of those things, let alone institution building, which is something completely different. They're disinterested in all of that. Or the strategic portion of governing, which is something different. A lot of them like to talk about the bureaucrats, the administrative state, but what they don't tell you about all that stuff is there's a science to it. These people aren't twiddling their thumbs. It takes skill and energy and measured planning to actually control what's called the ship of state. Having people smart enough to be able to do that plotting, to be able to do that creation, management and all of that staffing, I mean, tons and tons of staffing. That takes real skill. Skill that many of these people do not have. They just don't have it. Give you a great example of this. A guy that I knew years ago started working for another company. He left the company that we were working for, started working for another company, and he became a supervisor. And it didn't go well. It didn't go well. And when I was talking to him a couple of years later about why it didn't go well, and he said, to be honest with you, I'm not a people person. I'm like, yeah, well, you don't have to be a people person to be a good supervisor. And he goes, yeah, but I also don't care to do the supervisory things, the planning, the scheduling, things like that. I don't care to do any of that. And I was like, then why did you even accept the job? And he was like, they offered it. It takes a certain mindset, and these people don't have it. These people don't have it. The danger of this, ladies and gentlemen, the danger of realizing that these people don't have it and that they don't want to do any of this is ignored by the media. But the danger is this. These people keep getting elected, and that means they keep having access to the government and the ability to not only control the government, but destroy it from within. Now, I want to get back to the original topic that I started off speaking about, which is these Republicans having enough patriotism to go out their way to create a bipartisan solution. So many of them won't do it because they're afraid of being criticized by Donald Trump. They're afraid of being criticized by the right wing in their district. They're afraid of being criticized by Ben Shapiro and I can't even think of some of the other Republican conservative loudmouths on YouTube and elsewhere. They're afraid of being criticized by them. They're also afraid of being criticized by Fox News. Here's the thing. They're so worried about the media encouraging somebody from the right wing to primary them that they have forgotten. They don't work for that echo chamber. Or do they? Or have they? But they have really forgotten that they don't work for the echo chamber. They work for their people. They work for the constituents. However, it reveals something very important. Many of these people have said, many of these Republicans have said, the news media is liberal and, you know, it doesn't like conservatives and what have you. If you're worried about a large enough section of the media being able to torpedo your election chances next year, because the media can encourage somebody from the right of you to primary you, that means you have confessed in action that the media is no longer liberal. If there is a big enough megaphone from the media to influence conservatives in your district, most of these districts, by the way, that these people are concerned about, are overwhelmingly Republican. So if there is a big enough megaphone in your district, overwhelmingly conservative, overwhelmingly Republican, if there's a big enough megaphone where this media apparatus can convince these people
to elect somebody else that's to the right of you, you have in real time acknowledged the media is no longer liberal. No longer liberal. You acknowledged it. You've put it out. Now, you may say, well, they have to go to their silo because the media is so, No, you can't have it both ways. You can't run around telling me that the media is very liberal when you are so afraid of said media encouraging a Republican from the right of you to run against you next year. You can't tell me that. You cannot. No. The media is no longer liberal. It's very conservative. And in fact, you are concerned that it's so conservative that it's going to encourage somebody more conservative than you to run against you, to primary you, and to take you out next year. This is revealing quite a bit about this country, isn't it? This is revealing quite a bit about this country. The Republican Party is going to have to make a major decision at this time in history. And that decision involves whether or not they're going to grow up. I heard, I think it was on MSNBC, there's actually a former GOP staffer of some sort who said the Republican Party, it's time for them to grow up. And I think the person was correct. The Republican Party has to grow up. The problem is all of the adults in the room, and there has been a few of them throughout this 30-year period, most of them have been absolutely neutralized or kicked out of the party. The adults in the room, which existed in the 1960s, were primarily weeded out within 30 years of the civil rights legislation passing. Which, here's what's interesting. You want to talk about historical coincidences. The Civil Rights Act that most of us credit with opening up the door for black folks to make a little bit of progress in the last 60 years was passed in 1964. 30 years later, neoconservatives, riding a wave of dog whistle politics and wedge issues, took back the House of Representatives for the first time in 40 years. Meaning the last time the GOP had control of the House of Representatives was around the time Brown v. Board was passed. And it happened to also be during the reign of a somewhat liberalish Republican president. Between 64 and 94, the Republican Party that actually helped to pass the civil rights legislation that fueled dog whistle politics and the push towards win at all cost politics and wedge issues and go pack and everything that we remember from the last 40 plus years of conservative republicanism. All of those Republicans were weeded out, or the majority of them. Now, yes, of course, age had something to do with it, but still, by 1994, finding a liberal Republican in the Republican Party, or even a progressive Republican in the Republican Party, was near impossible. I believe the last actual Republican, like liberal Republican, was voted out sometime in the mid to late 90s, if I remember correctly. I might be misremembering that, but still, within 30 years, those Republican members that made the civil rights legislation possible, and I cannot underscore that enough, y'all. If it had not been for liberal and progressive Republicans, the civil rights legislation celebrated by black people to this very day would have not been possible. Thank you, Ornstein and Mann, for the book Rule and Ruin, RULENRUIN. Great book. It lays it out. They kicked them all out. Those were the grown-ups. Those were the grown-ups who understood that, yes, a free market may be desirable in a republicanist government, but you had to have guardrails to stop the free market from being overly, overly destructive to the average person. That was what liberal Republicans and progressive Republicans were about. They supported free markets, but they learned from history to understand what needed to be put in place, aka regulations put in place to stop a free market from freely destroying communities and families and individuals. Fast forward 1994 to the present, and who are the grown-ups in the Republican Party? It's time that the Republicans grow up. I have very bad news for the people who are saying those things. I believe them. That's the good news. The bad news is the echo chamber that many Republicans turned Never Trumpers on MSNBC used for years to demonize Democrats and progressives and lefties and all the people who were trying to fix the problems that their candidates were creating. The echo chamber that they built over the last 40 years thrives off of youthfulness, ignorance, and arrogance. It thrives off of all those things. And when I say youthfulness, understand, I'm not talking age. I'm talking mentality. When I've spoken to some hardcore conservative Republicans, I don't care if these people are in their 60s, they're in their 40s, or they're in their 20s. They all have the same characteristics with the same flaws. I'm not going to get into the characteristics, but the flaws are, at least a couple of them, should be noted here. One is the arrogance of patriotism. They believe that their patriotism is imbued and embodied in their principles. And because those principles equal patriotism, I cannot be a patriot, I cannot be a true American, because I don't subscribe to them all, or to any of them. Two, they have this innocence
of application, or no, that's the wrong way to even put it. They have this innocence when it comes to applying knowledge from a micro level to a macro level. And the best way to really explain that is many of these people claim to be pro-life and against abortion until their daughter needs it. Their mama needs it. They need it. Then they could justify it. Moreover, that's more hypocritical. They promote pro-life, anti-abortion. You know, we've had this conversation before about how many pro-life people are actually just anti-abortion. They're not actually pro-life. But they'll promote anti-abortionism without understanding the actual consequences or acknowledging the consequences that are going to happen. That's the innocence part. So I had them reverse. Sorry about that. That's the innocence part. Their incapacity, even when confronted in real time with the fact of what their actions are going to accomplish, what it's going to do, what the negative consequences are going to, what negative consequences are going to come about because of their actions. When confronted with this, they have the capacity to just ignore it. There's an innocence there about them. There's an innocence. Now, folk that I know, older than me, would say, that ain't innocence, that's just stupidity and hard-headedness. But I'm going to be kinder, because I know what the word stupid means. Then again, I guess it could be stupidity. See, because the word stupid is interesting. It actually is stupor-id. Keyword in stupid is stupor. S-T-U-P-I-D is stupid. Stupor is S-T-U-P-O-R. But I suppose linguists were like, well, we can't say stupor-id. We're just going to drop the O-R, move the E-D over, make the E into an I, and you get stupid. To be in a stupor means that you're intoxicated by something. I would suggest it's patriotism. These people are intoxicated by their own self-aggrandized notion from their patriotic principles. But that's just what I think. In conclusion, because what did I tell you? I said I was going to try not to make this that long, and really my intention was 30 minutes. I've been recording for 44 minutes. I'll just put it that way. In conclusion, when I talk with these people, and I guess I shouldn't say in conclusion because I do want to just say this one more thing about talking with these folks. The flaws almost give them rose-colored glasses when it comes to looking at conservative Republicans. They take those glasses off and put on, I don't even know what to call them, but like ghoulish glasses when they look at Democrats or anybody who's not a conservative Republican. In conclusion, this next week is going to tell us a lot about the forthcoming months in Congress, in the House of Representatives. Pay very close attention. Are Republicans going to grow up? Or are they going to remain big children? Are they going to remain unable to do the simplest of tasks? The reality is, I think this week they're going to finally get something done so they can elect a speaker. I do believe that. But the problems exposed by this entire saga will not be easily corrected. Why? Easily? See, I was going to address this a certain way, and then I changed my mind in real time. So I apologize for that. The reason, though, these won't be addressed is because corruption, when we think about the term corruption, we usually think of it in terms of, you know, people exchanging money or pay for play or, you know, I do quid pro quo, I do this for you so you'll do that for me. But the sad part is corruption is greater than that. Corruption has to do primarily with upsetting norms that keeps an institution stable, keeps it working continuously. Sure, it's not going to work perfectly, but it's going to be in continuous service to whatever the institution is serving. In this case, the House of Representatives is serving the people. Corruption destabilizes that institutional continuity. It destabilizes it by introducing a variant which, just like a virus does, it infects the processes within that institution with unnatural procedures, unnatural demands, unnatural constraints. And with all of that, with all of those unnatural influences, it may take some time, but the processes begin to distort and misshape and coagulate so that they stop flowing naturally and sometimes even altogether. Somebody pointed out, and I wish I could remember who it was, that the MAGA Republicans who wanted to shut down the government not too long ago has literally succeeded in shutting down government. They have literally succeeded in shutting down government. And they did so. They did so by simply ousting Kevin McCarthy and refusing to sit another speaker. And I know where I got this from. Somebody actually mentioned this on Twitter. Yep, I'm still on Twitter. And I ain't calling it X. That's stupid. It's Twitter. Somebody, an ordinary person, mentioned this on Twitter. And my mouth dropped open, and I said, holy crap, you're right. The MAGA Republicans have succeeded in closing down the government by kicking McCarthy to the curb and refusing to seat another speaker. It's time for Republicans to grow up. Take your medicine. It is likely, this will be the last thing that I say about this, because it's been 50 minutes. it's likely that either way, the Republicans are going to lose the House of Representatives next year, and it's possible that the Democrats maintain and expand their lead in the Senate. Right now, though, some Republicans can literally guarantee their ticket back to the House of Representatives by giving their votes to the Democrats to elect a bipartisan speaker who agrees to set up a power-sharing arrangement within the House of Representatives between the Republicans and the Democrats. Yes, the Democrats will likely take back the House of Representatives, but you know who will be right there with them? All of the Republicans who make that vote happen now. Because at the end of the day, the Democrats are poised for some big elections in the coming 6 to 10 years. The Republicans who understand that and learn to compromise so that they can reach realistic goals in this new normal, they're going to be the most successful. Now, I know some Republicans are just there to make money and to be greedy, but there are those who really honestly want to legislate. And if there's not a lot, there aren't. To the Republicans listening, it's time to grow up and elect some people who want to govern and administer. If you can't do that, you need to start questioning what patriotism really means to you. Sorry about my voice, y'all. It's late. Questions, comments, concerns, you know you can always reach out to me. I am now exclusively found on radio, the number 4ALL.net, radio, the number 4ALL.net. Just type Class War Battlefield Podcast, or you can even just type Class War into the search bar. It's right on your right. Right as soon as you get into radio, the number 4ALL.net, boom. I'm also on Patreon. I'll be releasing my first Patreon kind of check 1-2 microphone, check 1-2 audios sometime in December. My thinking is probably the first week of December, the third week of December. Patreon my Patreon is cheap to get on. You can support me at a $3 level. Just to support me, you'll get periodic updates on what I'm working on, what my shows, what shows I'm going to start working on, things like that. But if you hit me off at the $8 level, which is what I'm encouraging everybody to go to, you're going to receive 2 additional shows. Now, each show is going to be part of my new series called Article Reactions, where I read through articles, speeches, and some pretty lengthy documents, and I react to them in real time. I give commentary as I'm reading through them. Now, granted, people do this all the time, but I'm trying this as an extension to this show. My plan is, a month or two after I release them on Patreon, I'm going to also release them to the general population. There's going to be a couple of them that I do release via Patreon and then release them pretty quickly to the general populace, but that's only because sensitivity of time, things like that. But the majority, you're going to get about 2 months before everybody else gets them. And then depending on how much my Patreon grows by in the next year and a half, 2 years, I'll figure out other things to offer. But go and check me out there. Also, you can still donate to me via PayPal, via Cash App, CWB Podcast, CWB Podcast. Oh, by the way, for Patreon, you can go to this latest episode and just scroll down and it'll say support me via Patreon. Boom. You can click in right there. You can also go to my new word press Class War Battlefield Podcast blog. Sorry, it is Class War Battlefield Podcast. It's a blog through WordPress, and all of my 2023 and soon to be all my 2024 episodes are going to be on there. You can find my Patreon stuff there. You can hit me up on Facebook, Class War Battlefield Podcast. Just look me up, search me on Facebook. And you can also send me a message on my new, or at my new email, which is cwbpodcastmain@gmail.com. And that's it, y'all. Big up to Dr. Oba Tashaka. Ooh, man, blackest, realest show on YouTube. Big up also to Professional Left Podcast. You know, believe it or not, they ain't paying me for this, y'all. And I'm not asking them to, by the way. I really do enjoy their show. It's one of the best I've ever listened to. Big up to Dr. Karen Hunter, Dr. Greg Carr, Roland Martin, the Black Power Media crew. To Nicole Sandler, another beautiful show that y'all should be watching. Nicole Sandler's show, she's been doing it for a long time. My biggest regret with Nicole Sandler's show is that it's only on now for an hour. She used to do 2 hours, and I'm going to tell you, phenomenal. Support her work, y'all. Support her work. Tom Hartman, always doing great work. I just seen a interview that he participated in with Dr. Karen Hunter. Brilliant. I hope the two of them are going to do more interviews, because Tom Hartman has a lot to actually offer the black community with the wisdom and knowledge that he has. And so, you know, salute to him. I'm glad that the two of them got together and were able to do that. Christopher Titus, Armageddon Report. Wait a minute, Armageddon Update. By the way, if you don't know Christopher Titus, y'all, look up some clips from his defunct show called Titus. Absolutely stunning show. I mean, dude is hilarious. He doesn't get nearly the respect that he deserves, you know. Wonderful stuff. Man, who am I forgetting? Oh, Jay from Best of the Left, man. How you doing? I love Best of the Left Podcast, man. I really love Best of the Left Podcast. And so, guys, he's been doing it for years. Support him. Countdown with Keith Olbermann, obviously. And there's so many more. So, I am now including a list on RadioForAll.net. I'm including a list of every single progressive media source that I list, including more. Go there, download, you know, capture the whole list, take the whole list with you, and I'm going to hopefully be adding more to it. Take it with you. Fill your iPod up. Fill your phone up with all these great resources. Majority Report, sorry, Sam. Wow, how did I forget you? I take so many clips from y'all's show, man. I should not be forgetting you, Young Turks, all of y'all. So, anyway, so I'm your brother, Brian Mary Diesel Guy. Thank you guys all for listening. Thank you also for contributing, those of you who do. And I'm hoping more of you do. Again, I'm your brother, Brian Mary Diesel Guy. And I've been waiting for something to happen for a week or a month or a year. See you on the next one, y'all. Peace. There's a shadow on the faces of the men who sent the guns to the wars that are fought in places where their business interest runs. On the radio, talk shows, and the TV, you hear one thing again and again: how the USA stands for freedom. And we come to the aid of a friend. But who are the ones that we call our friends?
These governments are killing their own, or the people who find they can't take anymore, and they pick up a gun or a brick or a stone, and they're alone.